Rowan Tyson here. We have a two-part episode today. First is Shane and I talking about the Oregon State women's basketball situation, the Timbers weekend, what we ate, and there's talk of a little race that's coming up. So you'll want to check that out. And then after that, I check in with Taylor W. Anderson from Salt Lake City. We had him on a year ago when Salt Lake kind of jumped to the front of the MLB expansion race. Now it looks like Salt Lake's getting an NHL team too. So check in with Taylor, see what's happened that's worked so well for that city that's kind of leaving Portland behind. So that's coming up after me and Shane. And thanks again to everybody who has checked out the I-5 corridor this month. Once again, we're free thanks to the support of Brian Tovey. And we have 13 more days. So come check out the I-5 corridor. And if you like it, please support. It would mean a lot to us going forward, especially as we have a few more months of the offseason here. So with that being said, let's get to it.
Hey, happy Wednesday, everyone, and welcome back to the I-5 Corridor's Traffic Report. Tyson Aldridge here, sitting with Shane Hoffman. We are actually in the I-5 Corridor's Traffic Mobile.
Yep.
Just came back from Portland Timbers training today.
Yeah, not in traffic. But
No, we've parked. Yes. Everything is legal. We're actually in my driveway, but
we could record while we're going. That's not illegal.
True, but like I already lose focus enough
It's
been a little bit since we've did this. You and I actually recorded last week, and that you guys didn't hear it because we recorded, and then literally every single player on the Oregon State women's basketball team hit the portal.
Yeah, shrewd move by you. We recorded outside, and there was a helicopter overhead for some of it, so the audio was terrible.
Paparazzi.
Right. Yeah. And then we had a big section about kind of wrapping up the hoop season.
And I believe the key quote from Shane Hoffman was, "Why would anybody leave?"
And I stand by it.
Yeah.
And yet, there's no one left to leave.
Yeah. It's been a fascinating week just to see the reaction to what has essentially been the expected exodus at Oregon State, because you've seen the men's basketball team fall apart. Not that there was a whole lot there to begin with, but you've really seen the women's team fall apart. And I think that's been, I think even more so than the Damian Martinez thing last week where he left. I think the women's one is more tragic just because like that was conceivably the one program that could still compete at somewhat of this level moving forward. Because I don't think, you know, even in people's best case scenarios, there's a whole lot of belief that like football is going to be necessarily like competing for a national title here. But like the women's team, especially, we've seen like WCC teams compete across the country. Like basketball is a different animal. And to just see the economics of a team that's put together, a team that could potentially win a national championship next year, to essentially be nothing now is pretty tough.
Well, you said conceivably, and you said WCC teams can still compete, but that wasn't going to be a WCC team. They were going to play that sort of schedule, but that's a Final Four caliber team, right? Yeah. And so, the reason I guess I was surprised in part is that when you have that sort of schedule, they probably wouldn't have gotten as high of a seed. That being said, when you enter the season, they were going to be probably top 10, top 15, maybe even higher, depending on what they had, you know, maybe added this offseason, that you have that kind of cachet to work with where you maybe enter the postseason and despite, you know, they might have been like undefeated or something, and they have the, you know, everyone's kind of remembering the run they had the year before. Yeah, I'm still, I guess, reeling from it a little bit. I am quite surprised because it was a real good team, and it seemed like they were really bought in. There was a lot of talk about chemistry and this and that.
Well, I think that's why that hurts so much, probably, is because like that felt like a uniquely kind of homegrown team. And you know, working relatively closely with like some of the Oregon State staff and just knowing like how much like work that they put into the program this year. I mean, even just from, you know, we had Andrew Goodwin on this podcast a couple months ago, just like the production and the way that they really turned that into an operation that was worthy of the play on the court was really cool. And it was really cool to see Corvallis turn out for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe there was this little bit of suspended disbelief that maybe the reality wasn't going to come crashing into Corvallis like it did in the days afterwards. I think that's what's so dramatic about it, too, is it's there's no, like, goodbye period. Like, you know, maybe if all those transfers came like 3 weeks later where it kind of felt like that there was maybe more time to marinate on it, maybe that would have felt better. You know, you saw a handful of different reactions in the last week. You know, you can look at like Rich Burke, the broadcaster's like seven part one that was relatively torn apart because it kind of looked like he was kind of telling the girls what to do. But I also like I understand kind of that perspective too. It's there was a lot of like, this is family, this is home, like rally around this, and then it ends. And then I don't think it's fair to ask any of those players to be the ones that like stand out on an island and say like, I'm going to be different, mm-hmm. because like, this isn't their battle. They're not the ones that caused this, but this is definitely a direct correlation to the money stuff that has been happening within the last couple of years of college athletics.
And they're young and impressionable. Yeah. I mean, they're watching their teammates and really their friends leave. You know, Talia announced it, and then there was a kind of a long break, and then all of a sudden it was this flooding of people saying that they're going to leave. And I mean, I'm not that far removed from them age wise. Like, I could see if I was on a college team and all of my teammates and friends left, and then on top of it, I'm like, are we going to be a good team next year? Who are my teammates going to be? I might leave too. And this is just kind of how it is now. And Oregon State has been dealt a really rough hand in kind of an era that's still figuring itself out in college athletics.
Do you think, or actually, let me rephrase that. How does Scott Ruick come back from this? Because like it was already a pretty dramatic turnaround this year from taking that team that really kind of bottomed out in the years after the pandemic, mm-hmm. to rebuilding them into one of the Pac-12's best programs. Like, I don't even know how you go about building your roster, because right now you probably just don't know like what sort of athletes like want to come, right? Like,
yeah.
Or so do you think that this specific team blowing up just kind of had to happen, and then they can kind of go about and like rebuilding like what the future for that is gonna like?
I don't think it had to happen. I still think it's super unfortunate, but assuming he stays, because that would really surprise me if he left. Assuming he stays, I think
12:43 Tuesday, April 16th.
Yeah,
okay,
cool. Yeah, I'm gonna have to scrap this one too. I think he'll be able to pitch it as this sort of like, how do I want to phrase this? Almost like the JUCO of D1. Mm-hmm. Like, until they get the schedule figured out, he'll be able to give, I think, players that are in between or trying to figure out their next step a sort of safe haven where he'll make them look better, maybe make them look better than they actually are. I think that might have been the case with some of the Oregon State players this year, and I wonder how it's going to look when they leave. I think he'll actually be able to make this roster competitive pretty quickly, and it helps that he has an Elite Eight run to show for it last year, and the fact that he's been able to sort of buck expectations. I wouldn't be surprised if they're like winning the WCC like year one still.
Yeah, I think that's plausible. There's definitely a little bit more optimism there than I think maybe on the men's side for Oregon State. And,
yeah. I think we need to dive into
that. Yeah, no, we don't need to dive into that.
And there hasn't been, there was a expected exodus on the women's side of Oregon. I don't even think there's anything to discuss there, because we saw that coming.
And then on the guy side, it's just kind of been a little bits and pieces here. You saw like Not Bartholomew.
We had Oquendo and we had Rigsby.
That's what it was.
And they're probably going to, I would imagine here in the next week or two, there'll be a player or two they bring in. I think there's some pretty
good players in the portal
That I could see them going after. But they have pieces still in place here. So I think it's gonna be quiet for a little bit on the Oregon side. But we're a soccer podcast.
Yeah, so. we are a soccer podcast. We just came from the pitch, from training.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't talk to the manager today.
No, I made contact with the ball today, though.
You did me. So we're out at the training facility, and they have the media stand just kind of on the corner. And like every once in a while, some soccer balls come our direction. And like 2 weeks ago, one came to me, and like I tried to kick it back, and like it looked like the most sports writer-y, like that's why you write the stories type of thing. And so today, Shane's out with us. And the ball wasn't quite like outside the pitch. It was
outside the white lines.
Yeah, so it was outside the white lines, and like we're kind of jokingly like, "Oh, Shane, go get it." And then like as you're going to get it, I was yelling just completely jokingly like, "Oh, you're gonna get in trouble." And then you kind of almost did get in trouble. I didn't know you couldn't do that.
One of the media people, like, chased me down.
Yeah, like, she got up and ran toward...
I know, I was, like, embarrassed. I was, like, I wasn't going to, like, volley it into the pitch. I was going to kind of lightly tap it back towards their direction.
Oh, and I, to be fair, I do think that we got lulled into a false sense. You know, we're college football reporters. Mm. We're not used to watching practice. We're not used to, what's the word... people being friendly to media.
Right.
And so, you know, we're out there. Today. Yeah. We got fist bumps. We got handshakes. And so, yeah, you know, Shane, there might have been a moment there where he thought he was on the team. And I thought you were going to do like one of those bicycle throw-ins. But instead, you just had an assistant coach kind of like lumber over and take the ball and not say anything. And
he gave me a thumbs up.
He did give you a thumbs up.
But I couldn't tell whether it was like kind of like a passive aggressive, like, yeah, good job not fucking up there.
Yeah,
you know?
good one, Waldo.
Yeah, I don't know, man. But other than that,
like a lovely day. It was, the weather was nice.
It was a little bipolar with the clouds.
You're working on a profile for the Oregonian on Evander. So you talked to him a little bit. Challenging guy to talk to a little
Tricky.
Bit. Tricky. Yeah. Not. Look, there are challenges on the Timbers roster 100% based on language. Right. Me and Shane are very limited in what we're able to do. Yes. Evander speaks plenty fine English. He's just a shy dude.
Yeah, I tried to, among other things, I asked him, he had this fantastic goal in their last game. And I tried to sort of, he had this moment where he did a big kind of chest bump afterwards, smacking his chest and yelling. And I kind of tried to ask him, I was like, is that like out of character for you? Like, when you're doing that, are you thinking that's kind of the thing that's going to get your teammates fired up as well? And he was like, it's just in the moment sort of deal. But he does seem like a very just kind of easygoing, real chill guy. So I'm excited to write this story about him and about their offense. And you wrote about him a little bit, and I think it would be a nice kind of maybe partnership with your piece, you know, hand in hand in a way.
He's just fun to watch, you know, especially in kind of like our infancy of covering soccer. You're looking for kind of just like things that you can connect with, or like that that is like, yes, that is what it is. Yeah. And it's definitely, last game I spent a lot of it just watching him in the midfield, mm-hmm. and seeing the way that he really changes pace. And kind of like it seems like he's going at like 80% most of the time, just because like he's reading stuff faster than everybody else.
I was trying to think of some cross sport comparisons, because he does really kind of glide, and it doesn't ever look like he's trying very hard. I think when I say that, I'm like, for some reason I'm thinking Jokic, but that's a crazy comparison. But yeah, he's got this incredible goal scoring ability, and we saw that with the one he kind of volleyed off his chest, which is just one of the filthiest goals I think I've seen. But he's also setting up for teammates.
Yep.
I mean, he got an assist off this chip he had that really,
that should have been his goal.
Yeah,
I don't think Felipe actually touched that one.
Right. So you wrote basically that you think he's kind of growing to a star that this city needs.
Yeah, well, it's just, I've been thinking about this, and it's like, who, for a decade, it was Damian Lillard's town.
Mm-hmm.
Like, untouched. Mm-hmm. And that was also during a period where the Timbers had the most success that they've ever had as a franchise. But when you have a top 75 all-time NBA player in a basketball city, mm-hmm. like, it's Damian Lillard's town, and then you go from there. Damian Lillard's not in Portland anymore.
No.
The Blazers aren't good.
No.
The guy that they drafted who was going to, you know, replace him right away, maybe showed a little bit of signs toward the end of the year, but, like, Scoot Henderson definitely is not a star.
The team has to be decent,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. So, like, the Blazers don't have a star. Shift down to college. Obviously, it's a little bit tougher because it's mm-hmm. Eugene and Corvallis. You have the transfer portal. You have just what we talked about with the women's team in Oregon State is, like, yeah, like, you, there are college stars, but also like the turnstiles are moving so often that mm-hmm. I think it's really hard to kind of have a region embrace somebody quite like that, unless it's like in the throes of August and Bo Nix is damn near winning a Heisman. And so it's like who's the big shot in Portland? Like, you know, you could make an argument maybe Sophia Smith, but the Thorns are god awful,
right.
too.
It goes
like,
hand in hand with it. The team has to have some sort of
and
thing
so,
going for it.
And so when they signed Evander last year, there was this big expectation of, like, this is the most expensive player we've ever paid for. He's going to do these magic things. You know, I had that story last season talking with Gio Savarese about, like, what to, like, expect from him. And he was just saying his anticipation and touch, and he called it the magic of Evander. And he was just like okay last year. Like it took him a little bit to adjust. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it was the coaching, maybe it was the play style, maybe it was just new league.
Well, and pieces around him.
Yeah. But holy hell, like this year, like kind of in, I recycled that quote from Gio from last year because it's like that's kind of what it feels like you're getting with this guy. And if this is a team that is blossoming, it seems like they're playing better than they were at the start of the year. They're still not like a bona fide playoff team. Like there's still like some kinks to work out. But like he's I think Evander is one of the more electric players that Portland's had. Yeah. And, you know, this is, you know, it's at a confluence of times where I think that like if they can market him right, mm-hmm. and if they can kind of get him to get out of the box of being so damn shy all the time, like there's definitely some ceiling there, especially if he keeps playing this well. The drawback is, you know, he is a guy who could potentially, if he gets too good, might go somewhere else.
Right. He's been pretty vocal about at some point wanting to do that, and there was teams that tried to get him to do that this offseason. So he will not necessarily be here forever or for very long, but I think he's embracing while he is here. Like you said, I think they have to remain at least relevant, which they are right now, yeah. and they have something going for them, which is this really exciting offense. But I think we can agree, like, the way that athletes start to sort of transcend is that they can bring fans from other sports into a sport that they don't know, and I think we're not fans, but we're learning how to kind of cover this new sport and how to consume it, and Evander... This was the second time that we were at a game together, and Evander did not play in the first one. And there was so many moments in that game where it's like, oh, hold me back. Holy right. shit, what did we just see? Kind of yeah. like stank face, you know? Yeah. God damn, that was nasty. And that's kind of like, to me, if he can do that for me, I think, yeah, I mean, and some of the things he's done have just been, yeah, magical.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it there. It's when an athlete is able to wow people who aren't just like the diehards, mm-hmm. or like when you can see something in a guy without having to be like, I've watched every game of soccer.
It's not just the goals or the yeah. assists. Like you wrote about it, like some of the little moves he had.
Yeah, he had like you know, just like little nutmegs here. That time, like he flipped the ball over to just kind of like yeah. make some space. Like it's fun soccer to watch and. It just seems like he really has a control of the game.
Yeah, I hope they get the defense figured out a little bit. You know, I think the whole team knows that that's a focus, and it doesn't seem like a divide in the team necessarily, but right. it has cost them some points here.
How was your trip to LA?
Oh yeah, man, it was nice. It's a great city. Man, it's so tempting to move down there because I got a lot of buddies down there.
And it's not like things are going great for you here. Like you're sitting in a car with me.
Right. Yeah. Man. It's weird. I leave now, though, and I come back to Portland, and I appreciate Portland more and more. There is something about this city that has really kind of grabbed, latched on to me, I guess, and I do really love it here.
There's an interesting feeling when you're in a, like, visiting a city that you really like, but then when you land back in Portland and just, like, the ease of, like, getting from the airport to wherever you're going, and, yeah. like it's there's, like, almost, like, a decongestion feeling, like, especially when you're coming from L.A. where it's right. just, like, fuck, like...
Yeah, it's so expensive. The traffic is a fucking nightmare. But yeah, like the beach is just undeniable.
The one thing that I've never been able to get over about LA is every time that I would go down there for hoops, I would stay at Manhattan Beach, and it would be maybe like 62 degrees and sunny, not a soul at the beach. So I'd go down there.
Just you and Rosillo.
Yeah, just me and Rosillo. I'd go down there, get my acai bowl, and like just.
You want to hear something funny, man?
I do. Actually, hold on. Let's not tell anybody though.
I just found out that acai is an actual fruit. This is, like, my most embarrassing...
Did you think it was, like, somebody's name?
No, so I just figured that an acai bowl was, like, a parfait bowl, essentially.
Okay.
And I thought that the pink-purple stuff in there was, like, blueberries.
Really?
So this is a very vulnerable moment for me. And I don't feel like you can catch me with too many of these, but I just found out 2 nights ago that acai is an actual fruit.
So this is really got to, like, throw you for a loop for other things. Like, speaking of loop, like, Fruit Loops. Like, are they loops or are they?
Okay. Yeah. We don't have to get too carried away. I know my shit most of the time. But yeah, acai bowl. Maybe we'll get an acai bowl. But no, LA, there's a whole vibe to it. This is not the first time I've been, but this is the most extended stay I've had. I'm going back in June for a trip that's going to include Sequoia. But yeah, I go back and forth because there's things I love about it. And then I'm like, there's something about Portland that makes it a nice home base. because you still have a lot at your disposal, but it's also a place where, like, yeah, during the winter, I want to go visit my friends in L.A.
Yeah. Yeah, like Portland's, like, a nice, like, neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Come here. Don't hate it, per se, but then it gives you a nice boost to somewhere else.
But then it is just, you know, gorgeous when the sun comes out. I mean, I was biking around the other day. You were biking around the other day. It's like, these are the days you get used to, and it's like, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Where'd you bike to?
Mount Tabor.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a solid little bike ride.
Yeah, it's solid.
We biked down to the Pickles Bar on Saturday.
Right.
Which is about 6 miles each way from here.
Yeah.
My bike is completely out of commission, so I borrowed my buddy Derek's girlfriend's bike. Yeah.
You guys had some liquid gasoline.
Yeah.
Propelling.
Yeah, a little more so on the way back.
Right. That's when you need it.
Which was very needed. I also haven't ridden a bike in like 2 years, so I'm still a little saddle sore.
Yeah.
I've been kind of limping around the training facility.
It's something serious.
But
that reminds me. We're going to do a sprint.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to end on this.
No, we got to do shows and food really quickly.
All right.
Really quickly. Yeah. Let's do this right now.
Oh, yeah. So anyways, we're walking out of Timber's practice today. I'm feeling pretty spry.
Yeah.
I'm looking around at everybody,
shocked.
And I made an observation, and as you guys are listening to this, you trust my observations. I am the founder of the I-5 corridor,
right.
The most trusted voice in media in the state, and I think I could house everyone there in a race. Not the athletes, mind
no,
you,
right.
None of the Timbers
the
people,
media
but it was like me, Shane, the Portland's like two media officials, and three or four internet writers. And
you're crazy. Do you think you can house me in a race?
I think I can house you.
That's insane. I couldn't believe it. I thought you were joking
no,
at first.
No, because here's the thing. It's not even going to be that hard, man. Like, you're like, if it's
is the distance?
We're going to do
100?
100.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where are we doing this? It's grass, turf, track.
We should maybe we'll get some strings pulled and they'll let us do it at Hayward Field.
Yeah, for fucking Oregon relays are this weekend. Shit.
Yeah.
I think you're crazy. I think you're fucking crazy.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, like, it's completely cool.
Should
that,
we put
like,
something
like,
on it?
It's completely cool that like tall, skinny guy just automatically assumes that he's going to like, glide through
all
this.
Right, I'm 5'11", 175.
Uh-huh.
You could say I'm tall and skinny, but I also am in shape.
Uh-huh.
I do some weight training. I play basketball. I've been biking, you know?
Yeah.
I can turn on the jets when I need to turn on the jets.
Okay.
And I think I can separate off you in 100 yards.
Okay.
What should we put on it?
What do you want to put on it?
Well, I want some like something with some real shit behind it.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll let the people decide. And,
right. I'm sure there'll be a lot of feedback.
Yeah, so this will be... we're going to milk this for a while, but we'll probably have a race by the end of the summer.
Let's do it. I'm fucking hyped. Yeah. I might start training.
Yeah, okay.
Not that I need to.
I mean, I've been training my entire life, so, right. You know, it's time to start catching up. All right, best thing you've eaten this week?
Well, I had a lot of good meals down in L.A. I had some $18 breakfast burritos that were really good and really small. I went to Eam again the other night. That was really good. I'm more prepared for the show part of this. What did you eat this week?
Been trying to eat a little bit more at home, so I made some spaghetti. We made some,
right out of the undergrad handbook.
Yeah. 100%.
Nice. Just red sauce.
Just red sauce, noodles
and
Parmesan.
Nice.
Yeah, we'll call it good. Had some good Indian food a couple days ago. There's a cart here in North Portland, India Tadka House, I believe is the name of it. They do a solid job. If you order the 4 out of 5 on the spiciness, it's exactly how you want it to be. Like it's not.
Is that the same place as No Po' Boys? Same cart?
No, it's about a mile further
God,
down
no
the road.
No boys would hit right now.
Yeah, well, you know, you're in the area. All right, Shoei, you said you have something for
okay,
me.
Okay, Ripley, have you heard of it?
Allie started watching it. I haven't started watching
have
it
you
yet.
Peeked over her shoulder?
No.
So, I want to preface this. I'm only one episode in.
Okay.
Locked in.
Okay.
Dialed. This is it, I think. I think there's some whispers out there that this is the best show Netflix has had in quite some time.
Okay.
I was in. It's based off the Talent of Mr. Ripley, which has happened before in other shows, movies, and kind of flopped in some ways. This one, they're going black and white. It's very moody. A lot of like a very interesting way they're shooting it. I don't want to spoil too much. I'm super in off the first episodes. I'm doing that. The Sympathizer on HBO, I really want to check out.
Okay.
I got to finish up Shogun. I'm busy in the TV world and I haven't had a lot of time to lock in.
I think maybe since basketball season's over, we just get rid of the fast break. And we have you just write a weekly TV just break, lunch TV break, lunch dinner break. And we got to come up with
commercial a commercial break or something.
I haven't watched anything this week. Well, I was watching, I got caught up in like the Masters, and so I started watching Full Swing.
I'm still Netflix. Not there with the Masters, man.
You're young. You'll get there.
I know I will, but.
You'll get there. And the thing is like, I don't encourage you to like hurry that up either. Like, the Masters will be there ready and waiting for you when you're ready for it.
Mm-hmm. By then, though, I probably will have a job that doesn't support me staying at home and just watching golf all day during a weekday, right? Is it a weekend? Is it weekdays?
Starts on Thursday.
Yeah. Oh. I might have a 9-to-5 by then.
Yeah.
One can hope.
Goodbye, friends.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the I-5 Quarters Traffic Report. Tyson Alger here. We have a little bit of a different segment. I'm joined here by my buddy Taylor Anderson. He is the editor-in-chief of Building Salt Lake, co-founder, founder, or owner. What do you want to be called these days, Taylor?
What do you call yourself at I-5?
I don't know because, like, I try to think that it needs to have like some sort of like weight to it because I'm like a founder or so I think on LinkedIn I have it, but like, it's just a writer. Like, that's all I do. Can I just call you a writer?
I'm that. I write about buildings, urban planning, et cetera in Salt Lake City. I'm a writer too.
So Taylor came on the podcast about 2 years ago when Salt Lake kind of started to emerge as one of the kind of viable candidates for MLB expansion. And we kind of figured that at some point we would reconnect down the road to talk about whether or not Salt Lake would become a baseball town. I don't think at that point either of us really maybe thought hockey was going to be like such a quick thing. But as of this week, it looks like Salt Lake City is about to have an NHL team. Which is another sport that at some point Portland has attempted to bring to the city and has failed to do so. So I guess kind of one, my question to you is like, how did things with the NHL happen in Salt Lake, and why is that city so attractive to professional sports right now compared to like a city like Portland that is obviously trying in some regards?
So a little more context. I lived in Portland before living in Salt Lake City, and there's a few like distinct differences that I think tipped the scale towards Salt Lake City that I'll get into in just a second. But like for some context, Ryan Smith is the guy, the businessman who's driving the train right now in Utah, trying to get the NHL he wanted an expansion team. He said he would take any team he could get. And right now we have the Phoenix Coyotes or the Arizona Coyotes who've been playing in a 5,000 seat college
on
arena
Arizona State's campus. Yeah.
Mullet Arena. It's all like layers of jokes. They get more out of town fans than in town fans. Like, hockey is struggling in Phoenix. And that's kind of the backdrop of, you know, you got this young billionaire who sold his company for $9 billion only a couple years ago, went out and bought the Utah Jazz from the Miller family in Salt Lake City, then pretty soon signaled like, hey, I'm going to be a sports guy. Sports is obviously big business. These are billion-dollar enterprises. And only 2 years into running the Utah Jazz or owning the Utah Jazz, he says, hey, he started meeting with Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL. Right. He's starting to tell everybody on these podcasts, like, I'm an NHL guy too. You know, we're going to do it both. And I don't think anybody realized how quickly this was going to happen. We've got markets like Houston, Atlanta, Kansas City, Quebec City, like other places that have been talked about as like pro hockey towns or likely pro hockey towns that were waiting in line for years and years. And Utah just kind of sneaks in and actually we're at the 1 yard line, basically. I'm like cautiously optimistic. It looks like it will happen and it could happen. An announcement could happen any day now that the season's over. But these things, as you know, from when Portland didn't get the NHL, can fall apart on the 1 yard line for sure.
So take me through it a little bit, because is this essentially kind of going to be like the final piece of what ends up being like a new stadium redevelopment area, or like does the team just go in and play where the Jazz are now? Like, what's the stadium situation?
Yeah, so as owner of the Jazz, Ryan Smith owns the Delta Center. It used to be called the Vivint Arena, and everyone was stoked when it was renamed Delta because that's what it was called when the Utah Jazz were last good,
Right.
dominant, number two, I guess, behind the Bulls. But that's on land owned by the city in the heart of downtown Salt Lake City. The stadium's was actually recently renovated, like several $100 million were put into making it a better basketball arena. It is not a hockey arena. So that's kind of interesting because 5 years ago, Salt Lake City started to bring in the LA Kings to play their preseason games.
Oh,
So
right, yeah.
two out of town teams just randomly showing up, and they were drawing like 12,000 fans, which, you know, would be the lowest in the NHL and still three times more than the number of fans that are going to
In
Phoenix
Phoenix,
Coyotes
yeah.
games today. So nobody's denying Ryan Smith is like, you know, he wants to do it right. He wants to have a flashy everything. And right now, Delta, I haven't been to a game in a while, but from what I hear, it's a good basketball arena. When they have those preseason games for the LA Kings, the viewing lines aren't good. It's dark. It's not a hockey arena. And this is kind of one of those other advantages I was foreshadowing to before. The Utah legislature just got out of session. They just met, they have short sessions. And, you know, this was kind of on the back burner, kind of like behind the scenes until the last week of session when it's like, boom, we're going to give not only $1 billion to Ryan Smith for a subsidy to rebuild the Delta Center or to build a new arena, as long as it's in downtown Salt Lake City. They also gave $1 billion subsidy to the Miller family to attract MLB and build a stadium also in the city. So, kind of out of nowhere, you have this legislature and this lack of local political pushback that I think Portland has, where if you start talking about giving a billionaire a billion another $1 billion from the public's
Right.
money, I don't think that's going to go over that well in Portland or in Oregon, like it did in Utah for a number of ways that reasons we don't took it into now, but.
So you're from Chicago originally. You grew up a hockey fan, a Blackhawks fan. You and I played club hockey together at Montana. And in your time now in Portland and then in Salt Lake, you know, those are two towns that are somewhat competing, I guess, for the interests of pro sports. But I guess from like a hockey perspective, what was your view of Portland as a hockey town? What's your view of Salt Lake as a hockey town? And like from just like the sheer like what impact it will have on the city, like what kind of do you think it's going to be a big hit is essentially my question for you.
So Salt Lake and Utah generally has been like hyping itself as a sports community, a sports state. I mean, outdoor access is amazing. So people go hiking, biking. It's like you're an active person if you live in Utah generally. And Utah is still riding on the tailwinds that it got or it thought that it got when it hosted the Olympics in 2002.
Right.
So like that legacy is still very much.
That was a long time ago, Taylor.
It's a long time ago. I was like 13 years old. I didn't watch the games, but that Utah hosted it in 2002, and it talks about it all the time. I mean, there's relics all over the city. There's like manhole covers that still say "Welcome Olympics." You know, there's sidewalk markings. There's bridges that have 2002 Olympics. You know, that stuff doesn't go away, and a lot of those venues are still in use. Part of the momentum for bringing the pro sports here is that Salt Lake City is most likely going to get the Winter Olympics in 2034. Like all of this
All
stuff is
right.
happening in tandem and it's wild. You know, it all helped each other. You know, like we need venues for that. We need, like, you know, we're going to need skating rinks. We're going to need professional sized ice arenas. And what do you know? Here's a guy that wants to do it. So, as far as like the hockey town element, TBD. There's an ECHL team called the Utah Grizzlies in Salt Lake City. It's actually in one of the suburbs, West Valley City. Kind of dumpy arena. It was built for the 02 Olympics, which kind of shows you how quickly stadiums age out.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know what kind of numbers they pull for teams. It's several thousand people per game. To give you a little bit more context, growing up in Chicago, playing youth hockey, it's all over the place. You've got 100 teams within 20 square miles, and each one has a coach that's their job. They get paid to teach kids how to play hockey. That's the level in Chicago. In Salt Lake City, the buddies that I played beer league with are coaching the high school hockey
teams.
Yeah,
that's the same thing here in Portland.
It's like, not to knock it, right? And this is probably going to be a big game changer. Like, this will help kind of instill the culture. Online, you get a lot of people from Quebec City that who are pissed at this. They're pissed, like, they're a hockey town. Salt Lake City isn't a hockey town. They should have it, and we shouldn't. I'm like, if somebody wants to put up $1 billion+ of their own money, and yes, he's putting up $1 billion of my money too, but to bet that Salt Lake City can become a pro hockey town, I mean, I'm saying let him do it, and we'll see how it goes.
It's kind of fascinating to think of it from a Portland perspective, because, you know, in the mid 90s, probably through, you know, probably the start of like the 2010s, like Portland, like, would have been a very attractive destination for the NHL. Like, the Rose Garden, which is now the Moda Center, was at one point considered to be like one of kind of the state of the art arenas. And it was built for basketball and NHL sightlines in mind. But, you know, even in like the couple of years since I wrote that, or I guess like even like the 1 year since I wrote that article about like how close Portland came to landing Pittsburgh, I've been to like a couple games up in Seattle now, like up at the renovated the Climate Pledge Arena, and the show of like that arena, and kind of like the how modern it is compared to like what the Moda Center is right now. Like, it's quite the difference. And so, like, I don't know if like if Portland was ever interested in a team again, if it would be like a plug and play come to the Moda Center, or if that would ever just be like have to be like part of like some sort of like, you know, package to renovate or to do something new. I do know that there is seemingly like a growing distaste in this town for what's happening with the Blazers and Jody Allen. And I think I saw Canzano tweet a couple days ago that like any competing entity to that right now would have a pretty strong backing for it, just because there's a pretty anti-Blazers crowd. But I don't know. I still think, especially with like how successful it's been in Seattle, that like hockey would do well in Portland. But it just seems like there's quite a few roadblocks right now to that happening.
Yeah, and if there ever was a movement to bring NHL to Portland, you better hope that it works in the Moda Center, because just watching what's happened with trying to site an MLB stadium in town, like, that's another thing where Salt Lake City just happened to have these spaces that were already underway to get redeveloped, and there's nobody to push out, and displacement's going to be minimized, whereas Portland, like, those, there's a lot of sensitivity around where you're going to put something like that.
Well, let me ask you about that. And I know that you don't cover the Portland market anymore, but the latest news with the Diamond Project was, instead of the Lloyd Center area, they wanted to buy out the Red Tail Golf Course, which is down in kind of Tiger South Beaverton area. You know, that's in the suburbs. It's definitely not like the kind of like the downtown location that I think a lot of people we're maybe hoping for, but just you following that from the outskirts, like, what did you make of that kind of announcement or kind of positioning?
I thought that announcement was a last ditch effort to try to prevent the MLB from going to Salt Lake City or other markets, and to keep interest as high as they could possibly keep it in the Diamond Project. I think, you know, Dale Murphy traded himself from the Diamond Project to Big League Utah.
Right.
And now he's the biggest cheerleader to bringing MLB to Utah instead of in Portland. He was their biggest cheerleader for the Diamond Project, and now he's doing it in Portland. I think a lot of people said, hey, look at this announcement with the golf course. Like, it's not over till it's over for Portland. And I just don't think that putting – my understanding from you and from others is that wouldn't be a great location for a MLB stadium. For a number of different reasons. Baseball is an urban sport. It belongs in like the heart. I mean, try to replicate what you've got for the Timbers with Providence Park and do it with MLB. That's exactly where baseball should be played. So I didn't really think too much about that. It seemed like, oh shit, it's happening in Utah. Like, how do we try to not have this be a dead ship right now.
Where has the MLB Utah movement progressed to?
So that is Ryan Smith is the third most wealthy Utahn, and he bought the Utah Jazz from Gail Miller, the first the wealthiest Utah resident. She is the lead driver behind Big League Utah, which is the bid for bringing MLB. And for a time it looked like there was going to be a possibility that the Oakland A's would temporarily play in Utah because we have a couple of different minor league stadiums that would be in the mix. That's not going to happen. They're going to play in Sacramento before they move to Vegas. But like I said, they've got $1 billion in the bank right now. If they want to put up $1 billion of their money to go buy an expansion team, the public is already on the hook to pay for that stadium on land that's owned by Warren Buffett on the west side of Salt Lake City. We used to have a coal power plant. It's going to be decommissioned. It's just vacant land. Perfect blank canvas right along the Jordan River. It's like the kindling is all there. It's just a matter of when the MLB wants to expand, and it seems like Salt Lake City is at the very top of the list for when that happens. I'm not a homer, by the way. I should add, I'm not a homer. This has just happened. I mean, I am for hockey. I freaking love hockey, but it's more just wild to see how quickly
Oh
this city of 200,000 people has somehow attracted to pro,
Well,
jump to the top of the list.
I mean, it's like the only thing that's really comparable to it is like Vegas the last few years, but like Vegas kind of makes more sense for like the it had long been forbidden, and then you kind of had the pro sports breakthrough and then everyone is going into it. But like to see the way Salt Lake is what seems to be happening for Salt Lake is like almost what they've talked about for Nashville, but hasn't actually freaking happened over like the last like 5 to 10 years. Cause you always hear like Nashville's name kind of thrown around there. Same with Portland too, but it seems like Salt Lake's actually getting things done.
Totally. Yeah. Nashville's a dynamic place. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
What are we thinking for names? Are we keeping Coyotes? Are we
I saw a report, and I don't know if any of this is finalized, but I think the Alex Morello, the owner of the Coyotes, is going to hold on to the dream of having hockey in Phoenix. For some reason, Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, has wanted, it's like his pet project was to have NHL in the desert. And I think part of this deal, what I've seen is they're going to retain the naming rights. And so Ryan Smith would buy the operations, buy the players, and have the right to have NHL in Salt Lake City if this is finalized. I think the Utah Yetis is near the
Yeah,
top of the list.
I like that.
I guess there's some issue where
You didn't like
is
happen to play in a band in college that like was called Yeti by chance, did you?
luckily I retained the naming rights for
Sweet.
that
He
one.
probably owned like 100 URLs.
The one issue I saw from that is the Colorado Avalanche mascot, is that a Yeti?
Oh, that's a good.
Random, but I saw
I
that.
mean, but like ultimately, like have you seen like that abomination the Kraken have? Like it's kind of just like a ripoff of like whatever Gritty is. So it's not like
True.
this, you know.
Yeah. I mean, but by the way, I'm a huge Gritty fan. I think Gritty has done tremendous job for the NHL. I freaking love that
His
love
work
them
in the
there.
community is admirable.
Utah Blizzard is another sleeper name, and the last one, Utah Cutthroats, and this brings us back to our Montana hockey days.
Yep.
There's a travel beer league team called the Cutties
And
Cutthroats.
they'd always kick our ass. It was just a bunch of old. Oh, well, like we thought they were old guys, but now like I'm having a hard time conceptualizing how old they actually were because they were probably just like 28.
Yeah, they'd kick our ass today, I'm sure.
Well, Taylor, I'm excited for you guys. I think it's a cool opportunity for a city to kind of. Especially with them changing the name and kind of building it from the ground up, I think it's going to be cool to see how Salt Lake goes about embracing the NHL and how the NHL kind of responds to that. And who knows? Maybe it's another hit and the people with money here in Portland decide that we want to get in on that too. But right now you guys got quite the bit of a lead.
Otherwise, hockey might not work in the desert, and then you can have the team when it's done in Salt Lake.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Sweet, man. Well, what's the best way for people to find the work of the editor, founder, head writer, custodian, whatever you are for Building Salt Lake?
BuildingSaltLake.com, BuildingSLC on social, and I just went out and grabbed the URL for Utah Pro Hockey because this is a potential pet project of mine to keep writing about this.
Okay, so actually kind of like take me through that a little bit, because you and I have talked a little bit offline about it, but we're both somewhat I can't say the word, but
yeah.
There's definitely probably a bit of enough of a void in just the local journalism to be able to attach yourself to building a professional hockey franchise to cover the building of a professional hockey franchise like that. And I imagine because you're a hockey fan and also because you enjoy the business side of things, it's probably the way you want to go about looking at that is more how they build. Am I up the right alley there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's nice to see. I'm not like a diehard reader of like Barstool regional, the blogs for a specific team or something like that. But with this being all the rage right now and with no dedicated beat writers on something like this, figured I might grab on the coattail and try to build something. And watching the success of I-5 Corridor too is inspiration.
Of course, it's, every.
Weren't you guys at the Masters? Jeez.
The fact that we actually sold some subscriptions off of that during free month is, after doing this for a certain amount of time, you feel like the internet pretty well, and it constantly tells you that you don't, but I'm okay with it. So,
good for you.
Yeah. I look forward to, improving this podcast rapport, because, I expect to be the co-host of, Utah Pro Hockey's, weekly. They're not going to get a team now, are they? Like we've jinxed this entire thing.
Yeah, right, we'll see.
Yeah, Taylor Anderson, ladies and gentlemen.